Everyone, in the interest of time, since we have a board meeting at 11 o'clock, we're going to get started. Everyone?
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Again, we're going to get this meeting started. We have a lot to cover today. Good morning. I'd like to call to order the March 27th meeting of the Finance and Administration Committee. Before you is an agenda, which includes the authority to apply for a federal resiliency grant, as well as the approval of the public hearing report and adoption of FY 2015 operating budget. Are there any questions regarding today's agenda? We have a motion. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The agenda is adopted. We'll move on to the first item, which is the authority to apply for the federal resiliency grant. Ms. Kissel.
Take us through that.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With me here is Jim Ash, Metro's Manager of Environmental Planning and Compliance. Just a quick summary. In late December, the Federal Transit Administration announced the availability of approximately $3 billion of federal grant funding for resiliency projects in areas that were affected by Hurricane Sandy. The funding is available for resiliency projects that will be designed and built to address current and future vulnerabilities due to future occurrence or reoccurrence of emergencies or major disasters. This funding is available under the Public Transportation Emergency Relief Program and the Disaster Relief Appropriations Act of 2013. Applications for this competitive grant program must be submitted to FTA by tomorrow, March 28th. Metro has developed an application, and we intend to submit it by the deadline. The purpose of this action item is to seek board authorization for the general manager to file the grant application with FTA. And board authorization is required in this instance because the projects that are planned for inclusion in the application are not currently funded or included in our capital budget or capital improvement program. If the application is successful, Metro receives funding for these projects, staff will return to the board to update the CIP and the capital budget as necessary. And we'll use future jurisdictional funding that is committed under the capital funding agreement to match those federal awards. Mr. Ash is here and will briefly describe the projects that we intend to include in that application.
Thank you. Good morning. We've identified a number of projects to harden the system and make the system more resilient in the event of flooding situations. The flooding risks that we've identified are the result of refined maps as well as a more detailed understanding of the system and increased urbanization around our rail system. So we're working to make the system more resilient. Thank you. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff? Mr. Downey?
I want to be sure I understand it. In the list of measures, can you tell me what 10 shaft elevations refer to? Are these the air vents where you want to be sure the water isn't going down into the system?
Yes, that's correct, Mr.
So we'll be building where we now typically have sandbags sitting day in and day out, where there would actually be structures to
That's the plan, sir. Yes, sir.
And I assume we'll have to get approval by lots of different agencies to do that?
We're working diligently on that, yes.
Give us some help on that.
Ms. Porter.
How much in grant funds are we applying for under this program?
Again, please.
How much are we applying for?
Up to $130 million in grants.
Okay, so we haven't decided on the exact number?
It's the number as of this morning was $125 million.
Okay.
Last night it's $130 million. We're working to get it refined consistent with the grant criteria.
Okay, so we're just working to refine the numbers at this point in terms of the costs of these various things that we want to do.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Dale.
This would be part of the capital funding agreement negotiations as we move forward?
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions, Mr. Downey?
This is, as I understand it, a discretionary federal program. Federal Transit will be making allocations. I would certainly expect the bulk of the money will be going to New York and New Jersey, but one would hope there'll be some geographic equity that they would apply, and we'll certainly try to push for that. Yes, right.
Mr. Goldman.
Just one question to follow up on Mr. Downey's question. On these federal grants, is there a matching requirement?
Yes, there's a 25% non-federal match requirement.
20 or 25?
25, it's a 75-25. Yes.
25?
Yes.
And so the 25% you would be assuming will be picked up by the jurisdictions in some percentages?
So in the intent would be to use future jurisdictional contributions with, consistent with the existing capital funding agreement in the future years when these projects would be advanced. So we wouldn't anticipate a net increase in jurisdictional contributions for this program. We would use planned funding in the future for this.
So it would not have to go to whatever future capital improvement program jurisdictional funding percentages and numbers agreed to among the jurisdictions.
So there's a slight nuance here to the extent that the project schedules push beyond the expiration date of our current capital funding agreement. The renewal of that capital funding agreement would contemplate these grants and the match too.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? If not, I'd entertain a motion to move the resolution for you. It's moved. Second? And it's moved and been seconded by Mr. Downey. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The resolution passes. Next up is the approval of the public hearing report and the adoption of the FY 2015 operating budget. Just to put this into some perspective, again, at the last committee meeting, we had a very vigorous discussion about the proposed fare structures as well as other aspects of the general manager's proposed operating budget. We've raised issues with respect to the bus cash surcharge, the increase on the Metro Access fares, as well as the parking proposed parking increases. After reviewing the discussion, as well as considering input from the public and things that we've heard over the course of the public hearing period, staff has gone back and have a revised proposal that they're going to present to the committee today. So this essentially will hopefully address many of the issues that were raised at the meeting. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Schofield, who will make today's presentation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You just gave my whole introductory speech, so I will jump right into the content. Thank you. We spoke last time at length about the Metro Access fare structure, including a number of the proposals that the Access Advisory Committee had put forward. The two specific proposals that had received the most attention from the board were a reduction in the multiplier from 2 to 1.9 and a reduction in the maximum fare from $7 to $6.50. The fiscal impacts of these two proposals for FY15 are about the same, roughly an impact, roughly an added. And in addition to the subsidy of approximately $500,000. From a policy standpoint, however, we believe that reducing the cap is a preferable change to reducing the multiplier. The cap was created and has been maintained in order to keep the Metro Access fares from reaching as high as the double digits. Right now, the fare could go as high as $13, almost $14 if the cap were not in place. That cap amount has always been based on various considerations of equity and affordability, and certainly those considerations can change over time. We have two concerns, however, about changing the multiplier. The first being that the multiplier would then be sort of placed on the table, so to speak, each time that Metro considers a fare increase, and the pressure, I think, would always be there to reduce the multiplier rather than to raise it. And we also have some concern that the 1.9 figure was just derived by linking the Metro Access fare increase to the rail increase, while at the same time we are asking our bus customers to potentially take on a 9% fare increase. The broader concern is more about reversing course on the board's previous efforts to bring the Metro Access service and fares in line with the ADA requirements. As the demand for paratransit service has grown over the last decade and looks likely to grow further, it will be more difficult, we think, to rationalize the need for assistance from both the federal government and from our state and local partners if the Metro Access services are priced in a way that is less than allowable beneath the ADA requirements. The second issue, as the chairman mentioned, was the cash surcharge on bus. The proposal for March 13th was to retain the surcharge with a local cash bus fare of $2 compared to a smart trip fare of $1.75. If there were not a surcharge, then it would be $1.75 across the board for all local trips. And the same thing then would apply to the airport and the express routes as well. This is frankly an issue that has pros and cons on both sides. This was acknowledged actually by the Riders Advisory Council in their letter to the board, where they noted that there are reasons to get rid of the surcharge in terms of simplicity and in terms of responsiveness to the needs of the most price-sensitive riders, while the RAC ultimately recommended that the surcharge be kept in order to further their goal of long-term having cashless fare boxes on the Metro bus. So there are, as I said, pros and cons on both sides. If the surcharge were to be removed, the net fiscal impact would be approximately $1 million for FY15. And finally, the base parking fee. The current proposal is for a 25-cent base parking fee increase across the system. We have talked quite a bit in these discussions about dollar increases versus percentage increases. And it is certainly true that if you have a 25-cent parking increase, that your park-and-ride customers who are parking and then riding the rail would see a larger dollar increase on their morning commute trip, for example, something like 35 to 40 cents on a typical trip. But on a percentage basis, you would still be looking at an increase of only, say, 3, 4, 5%, even including both the parking and the rail trip. On a more practical note, given the recent discussions, it has been our practice in the past to raise our parking fees in 25-cent increments. That is dating back to the days of cash payment, just to make that easier for customers. But with all the payment now being on credit card or on Smart Trip, there's no technological reason that we couldn't do a change that was 10 cents or 35 cents or something rather than just in quarters. The budget or the proposal from March 13th assumes $1.5 million in revenue off of that 25-cent increase. If that number were to come down, then the revenue would come down proportionally. So, as the board contemplates one or more of these changes, and the desire then is to close the resulting gap with an expense reduction rather than raising fares somewhere else or raising the jurisdictional contributions, then we think there are two initiatives for FY2015 that offer the best opportunity to reduce expense without compromising on safety or the quality of service. The first is to reduce the planned contribution to the OPEB trust, the $5 million contribution. This would have no direct impact in FY2015, and if the reduction is relatively small, there are actions that we can take to get us back onto the plan relatively easily so that ultimately this would be simply a timing issue.
Just for the public, you may want to just, there's an acronym.
OPEB, yes, sorry, other post-employment benefits. So a fund to help us pay down the road the liabilities that we have for retiree health care and things like that. There are things that we could do to ultimately make this just a timing issue. We can monitor the FY15 budget as we progress through the year, and if we can identify cost savings that would then allow us to make back that contribution, get it back to $5 million, we could do that. Or we could commit to an FY2016 contribution in an amount. The plan is to go 5, 10, 15 onward into the future. We could raise that $10 million in an amount necessary to get us back onto the plan. And that would be another way that we could do it. The second option for reducing expense in fiscal 15 is to defer a portion of the priority corridor network and state of good operations investments for bus. These are currently in the budget for $5 million for FY15, with implementation being phased in across the year. So that represents a total 12-month commitment of $7 million. We can identify a new schedule so that things that are currently planned to be rolled out in August would be moved to December, things from December would be moved to March, and so on, that could achieve a reduction in that expense in a relatively balanced way. And the important thing is that this would be a deferral and not a cancellation. We would remain committed to doing all of these improvements on a full 12-month basis for FY16. So, based on the consultations that we've had with the jurisdictions over the last couple weeks, the general manager has brought to the committee today a revised final proposal that includes changes in all three of the areas that we just spoke about, and then a package of expense offsets in order to leave the total jurisdictional contribution the same as it was previously. So the proposal would reduce the cap or the maximum fare for access to $6.50. It would remove the cash surcharge on bus, and it would reduce the proposed base parking fee increase to 10 cents rather than 25 cents. So the combined impact of these proposed changes is an increase in the subsidy of $2.5 million, $1 million from the bus cash surcharge, $900,000 from the parking fee, $200,000 in revenue reduction from the change in the access cap, and $400,000 in expense increase from the change in the access cap. The proposal to offset this subsidy is through two actions, reducing the FY 2015 contribution to the OPEB trust by $1 million and deferring $1.5 million of the bus PCN and state of good operations investments. This would leave, as I said, the net subsidy the same as it was at $779 million for FY15. The budget resolution, which is in your package, also includes language, as was suggested by Mr. Goldman at the previous meeting, committing us to conducting a comprehensive study of the paratransit market in the region and potential actions that the authority could take to ensure the continued sustainability of the Metro Access service. This package, if it is adopted, will pass the Title VI equity analysis. As we had indicated to you previously, as long as the changes were within certain parameters, there was not really any risk of a failure. This one passes relatively easily. The system-wide difference in the average fare for non-minority and minority riders is only 1.3 percentage points, and the difference for low-income and non-low-income is only 2.1 percentage points. The board-approved policy threshold for that is 5 percentage points. The memo that explains the equity analysis is included as an attachment to the board resolution, and staff will be providing the Federal Transit Administration, as required, with a comprehensive Title VI report that covers both the outreach that we did and the equity analysis, and that will be submitted following the conclusion of the budget process later in the spring. So if the budget is adopted as the general manager's revised proposal now has it, it looks very much like what we saw last time. On net, you have a $2 million reduction in total revenue from 948 down to 946. You also have a net $2 million reduction in expense from 1757 down to 1755, again, so that the subsidy of 779 there in the bottom line remains the same. That's just the makeup of the subsidy increase. Our recommendation, obviously, is that we adopt. And our next steps would be then the adoption next month of the FY15 capital budget and CIP, and then we would kick off fiscal year 2015 with the fare adjustments July 1st. And with that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Schofield. For the purposes of today's meeting and also to help facilitate our work, I would like to suggest, starting on page 32 of your packets, there is a draft resolution which would approve the fiscal year fare changes, the public hearing report Title VI equity analysis, and adoption of the FY 2015 operating budget. It's essentially the resolution. 26. I'm sorry, I'm not looking at this. I'm actually looking at the old school way here. I would suggest that we move the resolution to the table to help facilitate our discussion, since this is literally what we would adopt. And any, we have a, it's moved. Any second? The resolution has been moved. There's a motion to move the draft resolution for discussion purposes. We have a second? Okay, now we'll have a discussion. Okay. Any questions, comments? Mr. Goldman.
Just picking up our discussion from last week, I just did want to indicate appreciation of the staff for including the suggestion for a broader study of Metro access needs in our resolution. And for benefit of the record, I just wanted to sort of read what that language looks like at this point in time. So it reads, resolved that as part of the ongoing efforts in support of Metro's strategic plan, Momentum 2025, the Board of Directors directs staff to study long-term sustainability of Metro access and related services, including demographic changes that will impact the number of eligible riders, improvements to bus and rail facilities to promote accessibility on fixed route transit, the effectiveness of Metro access in comparison to human service, healthcare and other providers in addressing riders' needs, alternative service delivery models for Metro access riders, and the impact of Metro access costs on riders and funding jurisdictions. And it be further resolved that the board directs staff to produce a report with the findings of the study and present those findings to the board by June 30, 2015. And after receipt of input from the board on its report, to propose a plan for meeting Metro access riders' needs through 2025 by December 31, 2015. So the intent of that language is so that we will be addressing the broader needs of the persons with disabilities, not every 2 years as a rates and fares type issues, but addressing it more broadly so we can find ways to make it easier and to encourage individuals with disabilities to use our rail and bus systems through the construction of better access at bus stops for the disabled, and also for finding subsectors of the group who might be able to use other facilities provided by our jurisdiction, such as the pilot project going on in Montgomery County. And so hopefully we will have a report by the second half of 2015 that will allow us as a board to address these issues significantly before we have to confront another round of Metro access fare issues and user issues in 2016. So I thank the staff for incorporating that into the resolution, and I urge its adoption by the full board.
Thank you, Mr. Goldman. Thank you for bringing this to the committee's attention. Ms. Porter and then Mr. Dyke.
I appreciate them, my colleagues adding that in the last discussion when I couldn't be here. I just wanted to propose a slight wording change to that. I had the opportunity, I believe it was last week, to attend the meeting of the Transportation Planning Board, and at that meeting there was discussion of the Transportation Planning Board's interest in starting a region-wide discussion of this issue, Metro access and similar services. And my colleague has also mentioned the work that Montgomery County is doing in conjunction with WMATA on some of these issues. And I would very much like to make sure that the work that we do on this is done in coordination with other similar efforts like that being carried on by the Transportation Planning Board. And so my proposal is to add to the first resolved clause that Mr. Goldman mentioned, when it says Board of Directors directs staff to study the long-term sustainability of Metro access and related services, and add in coordination with other regional and jurisdictional examinations of transportation services for people with disabilities. And then it would go, comma, including. So that's this, the purpose of this is simply to make sure that we remain in coordination and that board members, we have the benefit of whatever is determined and whatever comes out of these other studies that are also going on. There seems to be a lot of interest in doing this right now, and want to make sure we have complete information when we move forward in a couple of years.
Thank you. I assume you're making
I am moving that change in the language, the addition of the language. Yes.
Any second?
Second.
The amendment has been moved and seconded. Any other discussion regarding this amendment? Ms. Hutchins, did you have a comment on this amendment? Okay.
No.
Any questions about it? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment passes. Ms. Hutchins. I'm sorry, Mr. Dykin is the chief. Sorry.
Oh, I will defer to you, Kevin. Are you going to address a different issue?
Yes, I'm adding a different issue. I'm adding to this.
Oh, okay. Well, the only thing I wanted.
On that.
Oh, okay. Well, let me just jump in because basically what I was going to suggest was what Kathy did. So I'm totally in support of that. But I want to make sure the spirit of this is that we're saying that this is not just a transit issue. This is a quality of life issue. And then when we work with these other groups, that needs to be sort of the driving force here. We don't have to put that in the motion, but I just want to make sure it's in the record.
Okay. Mr. Costa, could I
completely
just
support that?
Okay. Make one observation about what we're doing, which I am absolutely in support of. Just so we're all clear, the way this is timed, it's timed to coincide with the next time we raise fares. It will not affect the 2016 budget because we won't have information in a timely enough manner for us to do anything about it. And that this is a huge task, and it's a lot of regional cooperation. So I just want everybody to have that in their minds, that this doesn't affect 16. It's really focused on what are we going to do in 17. Okay? So I just want to make sure we're all clear.
Thank you. Just before we move on to Ms. Hudgens' proposal, are there any other comments regarding the matter that we just adopted?
That's the assumption.
Okay. Mrs. Hudgens.
Mr. Chairman, you voted on that amendment. Okay. Yes. I just wanted to, and it's all in the same vein, and I think it folds in quite well with us. Throughout the budget discussion, we've had a lot of discussion about equity for the customers and how we work with jurisdictional partners, and that the customers across the transit system in WMATA, to really kind of talk with us where Ms. Hines is talking as well as here. And for the instance of removing the surcharge, that was a very big discussion. It raised a lot of concerns as well as it addressed the comparisons that we have here. We know that those customers that are most disproportionately impacted by cost are affected by the surcharge, yet we also know the surcharge reflects on performance of how well the bus services can be used. So I wanted to offer the following amendment to the resolution, and it would be adding just several other whereases to address that. And the first whereas would come after, and I guess this is probably the fifth. I don't think you changed, added it, but it would follow the fourth whereas so that it folds into the resolution. And it would read, whereas the adoption of the FY25 budget reflects an effort to find equity between our WMATA customers and jurisdictional partners in the shared operating cost of the metro system through an attempt to distribute fair increases across all services. And whereas, after vigorous debate and thoughtful consideration, including concerns raised about the impact of the bus surcharge that would have on those customers least able to pay, Board of Directors has removed the cash surcharge for bus customers, yet it is important to acknowledge that the cash surcharge has a dual impact. It affects those least able to pay, and it negatively impacts on-time performance, thus affecting all bus customers. Whereas, since the Board of Directors seeks relief for low-income customers while delivering the best performance to all customers, and the Board acknowledges that removing that surcharge is not an ideal or complete solution, the Board should address its concern for unbanked customers and those least able to pay for transit services through a more effective mechanism. And following the resolve clause, we would have a further resolve that the Board of Directors explore working with our jurisdictional partners and the human service delivery system, including the Metropolitan Council of Governors or equivalent organizations, to determine how best to bring equity in electronic payment and offboarding policy for the unbanked and those least able to pay for transit services. And then you have the resolve clause.
Yes, just a moment. You've made a motion. Do
yes.
I hear a second? Second. Okay, it's been seconded. Now, I think some folks have asked for a copy.
Yes.
Do we have a copy of this proposed resolution in writing that we can just.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So let's distribute that, and then we'll go into questions pertaining to this amendment.
And you could go to the insert and the two reds off. And let me just, as the members read it, I think the discussion here has been very good, because I think what we're talking about, as Ms. Hines indicated, we all, I think, are well-intended in terms of how we approach the fair policy, and that the idea of trying to come up with the revenue source, and most importantly, the share, and determine what share should we have with our customers versus our jurisdictional partners. But I think the continuation of trying to massage this process always brings us to the same juncture here. We pull out those things that are most entitled to one, and we shuffle those that are more entitled to others. And I think it's an opportunity for us to look at the fair policy in a much more holistic way and discuss these other issues offside, so that we come to the table and talk about transit policy in general. The surcharge was the discussion, and in the case of the Maryland members, it was the disability services. And so I think by pulling them all together, I think there is very much within the Council of Governments and other regional bodies to look at these issues and help us with those partners to try and address this in a much more holistic way. So I hope that it is a means of getting everyone here to the table and an agreement that that's a mechanism that can work for us.
Thank you. Ms. Belzer.
I just wanted to ask for a clarification, Mrs. Hudgens. In your second whereas, when you talk about the dual impacts of the cash surcharge, and you say negatively impacts on-time performance, is that the loading aspect on the bus? Is that what you're referring
yes,
to?
Yes, okay. Yes, yes. We know that we've been trying to go to a cashless system for other reasons, and I think doing so would also help us, as the Riders Advisory Council has indicated, that we need to go to a cashless and it improves the performance. It's effective. So everybody wants that same performance, as well as we want those customers able to pay to be equitably treated.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Bulger, then Mr. Goldman.
First resolution by Mr. Goldman had certain dates. The added one by Mrs. Huggins for the Council of Governments to look at this matter. Do they have any dates in mind to look at this whole paratransit delivery system?
I can't say that we have. I'm not aware of the date. I know that in the Transportation Planning Board, we are looking. That was brought to the Transportation Planning Board, and we will. And I think it is, Ms. Porter is a great partner in this. The Transportation Planning Board has been looking at both disability members as well as those that are less fortunate and disadvantaged incomes through its Access Advisory and its Human Services committees. So we have an opportunity to bring this together under the regional body that looks at all of these for all of us, our jurisdictional partners, our common participants in all of these areas. And this, to me, is a good place for it. It works with the disability community somewhat. We're speaking sometimes of the same customers, and it works with the human services side of the Council of Governments, which also then has the Transportation Planning Board as the real overseer for those services in our system.
Mr. Goldman and Mrs. Hines.
Ms. Hudgens, like Ms. Bowser, I just want to ask a clarification of some of the language. In the first resolved, could you just explain what is meant in the fourth line by off-board fair policy for the unbanked?
We're going through a new electronic payment system. And today, there are not many opportunities for users to load their smart trip card. And let's make the assumption that there will be a payment system that will work for disadvantaged customers. They still need places that they can do this readily rather than to be at the bus service. So as we look at that, that may be a longer term piece, but I think it comes back to how to develop the policy on fares in a way that goes across all of our customers that we serve.
So this would be sort of like a kiosk that would be located
and we have some of them in places. But that means that we have to jurisdictionally as well as Vermont look at how do we define
it. I just want to get clearer clarity as to what we intend to say here in the resolution. Thank you.
Mrs. Hines.
I just wanted to add a thought here, which is Mr. Bolger asked about timing. And I think in some ways this absolutely has to dovetail with what we're doing around the NEP, because that's when we make the big change. And what's slowing, as Ms. Hudgens clarified, what's slowing the bus performance down is that people are loading on the bus. So part of what you have to do is figure out how to give people other options. And having explored this a little bit, trying to get our, you know, have our human services be a place that people could load, there are a whole bunch of issues about how do you collect money and all these sorts of things, which are actually complicated that have to be worked through. But I think there's no doubt that if we want to sort of deal with the last issue of we really don't want people loading on the bus, then there have to be lots of easy, convenient ways for people to load otherwise. And that's really, that's the big challenge here, is can we get this accelerated in such a way that it doesn't matter whether we have a cash surcharge or not, there's plenty of ways for people to load a card and smoothly and efficiently come onto the buses. So.
In that connection, it may be appropriate to look at ways for means-tested individuals to have funding automatically loaded to their cards
by social service agencies. That really is.
Mr. Nichols.
Thank you. Just a maybe not so much a question about the specifics of the resolution. We're going through a fair payment system procurement implementation process at right now, and again, in terms of equity, there's so many different aspects of the issue in terms of Title VI side of it, and then there's balancing all the issues with respect to how people access and pay for the system. Any thoughts that our general manager's team might offer in terms of the this particular resolution? In principle, I don't have any. I certainly don't find the principle very important, because it's in harmony with the other issues that we're talking about. Absolutely, it's broad, and I'm trying to figure out what it means in terms of having the accountability within our resolution for what that would bring as a responsibility from our standpoint.
Well, the resolution as it lays is fine. The NEP and the issue with the unbanked, the issue with the loading of getting a broader distribution of loading for our bus riders, that's already in our business plans in FY15. So we're not waiting for this date of that resolution. We are already working on those things now. And so that's in our FY15 business plan. Actually, we're doing some work this year and analyzing how to do those deployments. And so we would not be waiting for the resolution FY15 to make an action. We'll actually have actions in the next year.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions regarding the proposed amendment? If not, I'll call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment passes. We'll return to the resolution as amended. Any other questions or comments regarding the presentation or the resolution? Mr. Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am going to support the resolution, but I'd like to comment on two parts and offer an amendment to the resolution with respect to a third. With respect to the delay in the priority corridor network implementation, I think this is entirely appropriate in light of the slow progress that's being made around the region with the implementation of federally funded capital investments to support the priority corridor network. And I'd like to see when we look at the implementation dates on that, how it will actually coincide with progress on that, which, by the way, has to happen fast before we give the federal money back.
under its deadline, so I'm supportive of that. On the parking, as a paying customer at the Vienna, I'm happy to not have to pay a quarter and only pay a dime, but I wanted to clarify one point in my mind, and it has more to do with the Prince George's proposal, which I would also support. Is the authority for the CEO and general manager to adjust parking rates to meet demand still in effect? It was adopted last year.
I believe that authority only applies to the reserved spaces,
yeah,
not to the regular daily spaces.
Okay. It was not to the regular spaces. Thank you. And lastly, with respect to other than OPEB, whatever that stands for, I am concerned that this not become a piggy bank for finding money when we need money. That was what we were doing with preventive maintenance for significant, with significant detriment as a result of that. I would like to suggest an amendment to the resolution. I've only been sketching the language here, but let me put it out. We might refine it if there's support for it. But the whereas would be, whereas growing balances in future expense for OPEB is a significant concern for future authority costs. That would be the whereas. The resolved would be the board remains committed to a viable funding plan for OPEB and directs that the 2016 budget be submitted with OPEB contributions consistent with long-term sustainability for the OPEB trust. And I'd offer something like that as a motion.
Mr. Downey has made a motion. Do we second? Mrs. Hines has seconded. Any discussion or questions regarding Mr. Downey's amendment? Okay. I'll call a question. All in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. The amendment passes. Any other questions regarding the general resolution? Mr. Nichols.
Yes. I'm not offering an amendment to the resolution. I'm supportive of the resolution as it stands at this moment, but I do have a question and some observations. The issue of parking is a substantial issue that doesn't have a lot of easy fixes. I drive to a station. I drive to New Carrollton. I park there, and so it's an important part of our process. But one of the requests that I have is I know that the issues of parking, of transit-oriented development, of replacement parking, these are substantial issues that have an enormous impact on our ability to maximize ridership, to maximize development. Some of the costs we drive with some of our standards around parking facilities and our own policies around parking replacement as it relates to development are important in terms of our own upcoming decisions. In October of last year, we sent the Maryland Department of Transportation had sent a letter to WMATA requesting an examination of our parking policies with respect to replacement parking and the wide range of issues associated with that. And I understand that actually some movement may be taking place on that right now, and I don't want to make that a part of the resolution, but I would like for a status on the our examination of the detail behind the request, and then for us to make that part of a dialogue around parking rates, parking fees, development, ridership. The nexus around all of those issues is critically important, and it really bears on our operating budget and our cost and our success. So if we could get a status report on that and when we would expect to see the results of that examination, that would be appreciated. Yes.
Now, and I remember, I think we'll be getting a preliminary with the general manager in a month or two, and then the final report in June. So we'll be able to come back and present that holistic, comprehensive parking strategy.
Okay. I mean, one of the questions that's important to me is we automatically make the link between the more parking we provide, the more riders we get. And I don't know that that's intellectually accurate, but I don't know that it's not. And I think it's important for us to examine all of the ranges of ways that we can maximize the ridership, and get people to the stations so that they can ride. Perhaps there are other ways that we can maximize that, more commuter lots that are further out on land that's less costly, and maximize the value of that land where the stations are to increase ridership and development, those kinds of issues. So I appreciate an opportunity to have a dialogue on that for the future. Thank you.
Any other comments regarding the proposed budget? Mrs. Hudgens.
I just want to comment that I think the discussions that we've had as we've gone through this have been extremely helpful, because I think we're getting closer to a much more comprehensive way of defining where this budget should go and what are the really key elements that bring the budget to a, I keep using equitable, but a balanced way in terms of how revenue and costs should be expended here. And who carries the burden? I think your last comment is also a very big one, because I think a lot of work has been done, and we've said that as a body we should serve as a greater role of convening our partners in the jurisdictions. And that one is one that is a very huge one, but it is one that takes a very, it will take an even greater balance of understanding of what happens around this region and what role we play, but also how we leverage what we do here at Metro to make the jurisdictions more effective in terms of the overall quality of life that we provide using our transportation system. So I think the work of the budget has been really one of the things that I think it always is. It's really what is the quality of the service that we're going to deliver to the customers. It is about what we think is our quality that we provide, not just the dollars that are there, but what the effective response is to the customers and the region and if it's return in value. So I hope we're closer to that today after a lot of discussion, because I think there have been a lot of pushed and pulls of what all think are important, and I think we hopefully are in a place that we're unanimous in what we've done.
Ms. Belzer?
Yes, Mr. Acosta, thank you. And I want to echo Ms. Hudgens' good thoughts about the process, and I feel comfortable about where we've landed, especially I know a lot of people have thought long and hard about how we could hold the bus charges in line with people's ability to pay. So I feel very good about that. But it also kind of speaks to this notion that I think is a challenge for all of us. While costs are going to continue to go up, what I hear more and more from our riders is there is a price at which they will make other choices. And we have to be prepared as jurisdictions to kind of fill that gap. And the challenge that we're taking on in the district is how we're going to find those dedicated sources to be able to invest in all of our capital needs for transit and operations needs for transit, because we're not going to be a region that anybody wants to continue to choose if we don't have a great transit system in each of our jurisdictions. And I know everybody around this table is committed to doing that. So thanks to all the staff and board members for getting to this point.
Any other comments? Mr. Goldman.
Thank you, Mr. Acosta. I will also be voting in support of the modified staff recommendation today, but I do want to express my appreciation of the exercise that we've gone through, because this is my first time going through this exercise on both an operating budget and a rail and bus, and now I find out parking lot and other fare increases all at the same time. And it's been a very interesting and enlightening, and it's been an experience. through the hearing process, I became very sympathetic to the concerns and the needs of the Metro Access community, those who ride it, and I think we've come to a resolution of their concerns, at least both in the short term with a reduction in the cap, and hopefully in a longer term with the steps that we're taking to try and address this issue on a broader concern over the next 2 years, and I think that's a good resolution of that. And I think I heard the concerns of my colleagues from the district in Virginia who were concerned about different fare increases that would have hit their constituents and their riders. On the other hand, I didn't want to see a further increase in Metro Rail fares, because I think Metro Rail riders are going to get a hit in this budget, and they didn't need a further increase to cover the other needs of bus riders and parkers on our system. And I also didn't want to see a further increase in the subsidies for the jurisdiction, because I thought in the future we're going to need to look to the jurisdictions for capital funding, and we don't want to eat up their money by an increase in the operating subsidy for this year and for future years. So I think the way that the staff has able to come up with some cost savings in a budget which is a very large operating budget of $1.7 billion, and I appreciate that they were able to come up with $2.5 million of suggested cost decreases that will enable us to balance this budget without a further increase on either rail riders or the jurisdictions is a good resolution, and I'm appreciative of that. And I therefore encourage my other colleagues to support the resolution as it's now been modified and now on the table. Thank you.
Mr. Dyke.
Yeah, I just want to associate myself with all these comments of the spirit of us working together and compromising and realizing you can't get everything you want. And I think it was a really good process. And as a representative of the Commonwealth, I'm almost tempted to offer a resolution relating to Medicaid expansion. But I will just keep it going here, but I'll hold that back for later.
Thank you, Mr. Dyke. Any other comments? Again, I would, first of all, like to thank the members of the public who took the time to come out to our various public hearings to testify about their concerns with the initial budget. We heard you, and I think this process has reconciled many of the issues that we heard from a variety of communities in terms of what the impacts of these fare increases mean personally to them as well as to their communities. Secondly, I'd like to thank the jurisdictions for stepping up to the plate in terms of increasing their jurisdictional contributions to this operating budget. To put this into some perspective, this budget is very important to all of us in terms of keeping Metro on a continued path of providing better, safer service. We have next year the expectations of opening up the Silver Line. We'd like to seek means to improve our bus rail and rail on-time improvements, as well as our first customer care service program. So many of these things that we're going to do next year in terms of initiative will be implemented because of this budget. And also we have many key investments for our major assets, which is our employees. And as you'll see in the budget, there are many things that we're doing in terms of safety training, business proficiency programs, the succession programs, and work on employee engagement that we'll be undertaking next year in terms of initiatives. I am thankful to the staff for the good work that they've done in terms of turning around various scenarios in a moment. And it was all part of the process to get us to the point where we could reconcile all these needs and deliver a series of programs that are going to be very important to our customers. So I thank each and every one of you for your good work. And with that, I'd like to call the question. All in favor of adopting the resolution as amended?
Aye.
Any opposed? We have adopted a budget. Thank you.
Yes, I'd like to take this opportunity to commend the chair of the Finance Committee. I think all of us had an opportunity to interact with him as we tried to put this to bed, and he was relentless in his direction to us to work it out. And I also want to commend the chair of the board, Mr. Downs, and his shuttle diplomacy in keeping us together. I think it's a tremendous accomplishment for us, and we should make note of it. Thank you.
Thank you to Mr. Chairman Downs. I think Mr. Downs had a comment.
I also want to take note of the role that the chairman of the committee, Marcella Costa, and the vice chair of the committee, Mary Hines, have played in putting all of this together. I'd amend the old saying about the two things that you shouldn't watch being manufactured are laws and sausage, and add budgets. I've always said in this process that the most important thing that has to come out of this is a strengthening of the comity among the jurisdictions, and I think that's what's happened here. I also wanted to mention that while the board has a very strong policy about not taking issues directly from committee to board. In this case, because the board has ventilated this several times, both with itself and in public, we're waiving that and taking this resolution for the approval of the budget directly to the board meeting today. And I'm also taking the opportunity to remind the board that there is an expectation that we will work similar jurisdiction magic on the approval of the capital budget next month. And remind everybody that if you have not read the letter from the two governors and the mayor about their expectation about our capital budget approval process, including the details on the $75 million and the capital funding agreement going forward, that there is an awful lot of work as well, and that has to start after this afternoon with the approval of this budget in earnest. But I think this allows us a head start on that process in a way that I think is very positive. So thank all of you and thank the jurisdictions for helping make this a good outcome.
In a spirit of thanking, I also want to thank the staff for their work, but particularly with the work with respect to the Title VI analysis. This was breaking new ground, really one of the first agencies in the country who have gone through this. I think we've done it credibly. I certainly would be interested to hear what the federal reaction is to that, whether they're satisfied.
Any other matters to be brought before the committee? If not, this meeting is adjourned.